welcome along to another episode of The Good, The Scars and The Rugby in Partnership, as ever, with our pals at Allianz. The big news of the last few weeks, our own Sporty Brownie back in action, back in purple, back in the England squad. It's been a pretty big couple of weeks. Emily Scarrett, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, back out on the pitch, managed to get 20 minutes in against Gloucester Heartbreak a couple of weeks ago, which is really good. And they were then due to have 40 minutes this weekend against Bristol, but after 2.5 years, COVID finally got me, so then I wasn't allowed to play, which in the context of what's happened the last couple of years is terrible timing. But I mean, it happens, doesn't it? So yeah, unfortunately wasn't able to rack up any more minutes this weekend. But yeah, we've been England camp last week, and then yeah, some more camps coming up. But again, obviously I'm not in them just yet, waiting to be cleared.
How's everything feeling? Is it feeling all right? Feeling good?
Yeah, all right. Like, obviously, it's not brand new. It's never going to be, but it's...
You're at that age, my dear. You're at
functional.
That age.
Exactly. So, it was really nice to be back out on the pitch. I missed all the winter weather, haven't I? So, I got a bit of sunshine when I was out there. So, can't complain.
So typical. The sun comes out when Scaz is back. She's got her own podcast. She doesn't like the name in it. She's even got a statue in London now after her. She's like, yeah, I don't really want to talk about it, but let's talk about it. How's the statue? Are you happy with the statue? Happy how it came out?
Yeah. It's ridiculous, isn't it? To be fair, it's been a really cool campaign to be a part of. When Simon from Adidas, who's the guy who looks after me, called me up and told me about the whole concept and stuff, I was like, sounds really cool, but you kind of expect it to be a watered-down version. Do you know what I mean? Because it's, I don't know, it's just you don't expect there actually to be a statue of you. So then obviously when I went to the day when it came to life and I was getting photographed by what was hundreds of cameras to create this 3D print statue thing, it was ridiculous. But it has been really cool. Like the whole, as I say, the whole concept, the whole theory in terms of there's more statues of animals in London than there are of women and stuff like that. And just trying to raise awareness and give a bit of light to some strong female athletes has been cool.
I've given way too much thought to this, but did you choose what you were going to wear?
No. So this has been given a lot of attention, actually. So basically, it's kind of doubled up with another one of their campaigns, which is all to do with their new sports bra ranges. # support is everything. So I was always on brand.
That is why.
So that's why I'm in a sports bra. Obviously, it would not be my choice or normal wear to wear a sports bra, but it doubles up with that campaign. Again, that one's quite cool because they're actually making sports bras that actually fit people and actually support people. So all good. But yeah, everyone was like, "She's a rugby player. Why is she in a sports bra?" Because I don't think they'd quite grasped the whole campaign, but you can't have it all.
Emily in her bra right next to the Thames. I mean, literally could not have predicted this. The year is kicking off in a wild fashion. And speaking of kicking off in a wild fashion, our guest this week has taken both the 7th Circuit and the Allianz Prem 15s, actually, particularly this season, by absolute storm. When Nolly Waterman says of you, "Rugby, completed it, mate," that is probably one of the best compliments you can ever get. She makes magical moments out of absolutely nothing on the pitch for Wasps and England in 7s and 15s. She's an Olympian, a World Cup finalist, and she pulls the strings at 10 for Wasps. And they, of course, historic victory over Quins over the weekend. Welcoming to the show, Meg Jones.
Well, Elma, that was a very nice introduction. So it's a pleasure to be on you. And I haven't got my statue yet, but fingers crossed, it's on the horizon.
It's in the pipeline.
Yeah, it's definitely. And I've gone for the colour blue, a neutral colour. So we'll see how that pans out. Probably not as big as Scazzy's. I'm only 5'4".
If you could put your statue anywhere, where would you put it?
Good question. Probably outside my house. Meg Jones lives here. Yeah.
Well, she used to live here, like one of those plaques on the wall that says someone really important used to live right here.
Yeah, that's what I need. One of those.
Well, after you guys beat Quinns over the weekend, I feel like there should be like a little statue moment for you up in Coventry.
Or at least a golden letterbox or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Jiz is probably emptying for that. So that's what she's doing today. She's in a big meeting trying to get a gold letterbox outside of Twyford. but nah, it was a good, really good game on the weekend. The front row were definitely there shining. And I think Bryony and Maud were saying, well, Bryony in particular, obviously got something to say, but she was like, how did you get a player of the match? Like, the front row killed it. And I was like, yeah, you did, to be fair, but me and Kat are pretty tight, so she obviously gave it to me.
I was going to say, when your ex-housemate and winger is on comms, then it's too easy, isn't it, mate?
Exactly, and she's a back as well, so she appreciates it a lot more.
Yeah.
But the front row were amazing. The whole team just started to click. So yeah, hopefully after Six Nations now we get the same results, because we've got Gloucester, Hartbury and Surrey, so we need to win both those games to get top four. But Loughborough are creeping behind as well, so we got to make sure we get the points. Who have you got left, guys?
We've had a couple of solid draws, which does absolutely nothing to help us try and climb the table. But we've got Quinns and Worcester left.
Okay, back some 5 points.
So yeah, who have Exeter got? Because I think that's the big one, isn't it?
Bristol,
Exeter, obviously, they're the people everyone's trying to chase.
Bristol and Sarries, I think, or like Bristol and Quinns or something.
Is it?
A top team, yeah. So
yeah, it'll we'll be see. Tough.
Everyone's just waiting on everyone else to lose, aren't they?
Just waiting for someone to blink.
Yeah.
So like you can poach off the points off them. So did you stay, you stayed over at the hotel at the stadium the night before, and some of you apparently had a view of the pitch from your bed. Were you one of those people?
No, I got absolutely robbed, right? So I'd literally had the car park and everyone was like sending pictures in, like, oh my God, girls, look at the view. I was like, is this a joke? Because I literally, I'm looking at, I had a thank you NHS sign and then like a whole lot of like roadworks basically. But yeah, no, it was amazing. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, do the boys do this all the time? Because I'd happily do this all the time. To be at Coventry and almost like the home of Wasps in that respect, it was phenomenal. And I think a lot of the men's fans came down, which is really cool as well. The fixture list was all at the big stadium, so that was really cool to see for like the first time in the Prem. Nice to be part of history, I guess.
You could tell the people that had the rooms with the pitch view because it was all over their Instagram in the morning, like cup of tea in front of their pano view. Everyone else was very quiet. There's no car park shown.
I was tempted, but then I thought, don't be that girl. and Jiz would probably tell me off as well, like, Meg, can you just be grateful, please?
Meg, are you generally noticing that more crowds are getting better? There's more interest. There's, you know, obviously playing at Coventry is a great stadium to play at. Are you finding that as the sort of juggernaut of women's rugby gets really, really into full steam?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's growing like massive amounts. You know, and with the World Cup this year as well, I think it's putting a bit of spotlight on the girls as well. So I don't know if that's going to be quite scary as well going into such a big year. But there's definitely more and more people coming over from the men's game and actually giving the women's game a go. For it to be on BBC, et cetera, as well, it just makes it so accessible. Like, it's a huge thing. Everyone says it, but if you see it, it makes it so much easier to kind of grasp and want to be part of. And also you gain more of an attachment to it. But if it's just in the background, no one really wants to be a part of it. So to be put on like a bit of a pedestal, like pushing it a bit more each week, it helps the game massively. So yeah, we've got quite a lot of mascots, young girls at Wasps. And honestly, it's the cutest thing, like just rocking up in their little club shirts and just generally want to be part of it. So that's really nice to see, because something like when I was growing up, I probably didn't have much of, like, going to like women's games wasn't really a thing. It was all men's games, and yeah, you didn't really have role models or anything like that. So it was only till my later years, when I was like 16, 17, I started to realise there was role models in women's rugby. So yeah, it's really good to see.
I literally just searched your name on Twitter And Benjamin Black Balkwell says, shame not to see Meg Jones in the Roses squad. Best player to watch in rugby right now. Big fan. In rugby, not women's rugby. Best player to watch in rugby right now. And there's another guy here called Tom that says, that was a really entertaining game. Meg Jones is a quality player even before you consider she plays 17s and 15s in the same season. Very few male players still do that. She's basically a master of two different sports. These are people who didn't tag you and who are literally just fanning over you. Like, I mean, that's amazing to search a woman's name on Twitter and just get loads of kind of people having real rugby opinions about your game.
I know, yeah, there's mad, don't know. So I think growing up, you never really think like that's going to be part of the game. You just like, for me, I just play, and it's probably the same for Skazzy. Yeah, you don't want to search your name too much, particularly if you've done something bad. But yeah, no, it's nice to get a bit of praise now and then.
I was about to say that should be a new feature, Elmo. We've never done that before. We should always search the guest's name, see what comes up. Meg's lucky because she's come off the back of a good weekend, but could throw up some good stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit like those read mean tweets things.
They're always entertaining. Meg, I need to address the elephant in the room in the fact that you were born in Cardiff. You were educated in a school that I can't pronounce.
Ysgol Gyfungybraig Llantaf.
There you go, that one. How hard a decision was it to go for the Roses? Was it just purely because of where you were going to end up living and playing your rugby? Or, you know, were you torn? And how much do your family and friends maybe get stuck into you a little bit?
Yeah, well, obviously a natural rivalry in terms of Wales v England. So growing up, like, it was always Wales. It's hard when you're a kid, you're kind of just in the moment, right? Still am, but you kind of just, you're like, yeah, I want to play for Wales. But you didn't know, I didn't have any other options. I didn't know what was, hardly knew my mum was from England, to be honest. So it was only until I started going through the age grades, and, you know, I was competing at quite a high standard with the boys. And then we got to the women's side, to the girls' side. I mean, we saw a huge disparity in skill level and just participation as well. So finding games and stuff was really hard. Like, but I was at a really good club, so that was always good, Cardiff Quins. But yeah, my dad kind of, when I was like 15, 16, he said, you can play for England. And I always thought, like, for a proud Welshman to say that to me, it must be a huge option. And yeah, so I explored the opportunity, and that led me to go into Hartbury College, where Nolly was at the point. So that's why she's probably giving me a lot of praise, because she claims
she's claiming it all.
Exactly.
She's claiming it all.
I went to Hartbury College, and the rest was history, really. Like, I just saw a difference, but obviously it was a more refined, you know, pool of players and people who wanted to be professional. But there was nothing like that in Wales. And then even like the divisional stuff and county level, again, nothing like that in Wales really. And the standards of it was just a lot better. So it kind of just opened my eyes up. And then I was like, people just kept saying to me, you know, this career is really short. You need to take the opportunities. And I did. So my mum is extremely happy. So are my grandparents. But my dad, every time I give him some England kit, he always unstitches the rose. He says, I can't have that down the pub, Meg. So
a couple of weeks ago, were you sat on opposite sides of the couch for the Six Nations in the game? No. And were you cheering and in his face, or do you sneakily, when the lads play, you sort of turncoat and you pop the red jersey on just as a fan for the boys, or do you stay loyal?
It depends what pub I'm in. So if I'm in the English pub,
I'll actually
put a Welsh shirt on. If I'm in a Welsh pub, I'll put an English shirt on. So whether to wind people up is always the aim. But my dad is he's super supportive. So like, he's my number one fan. He's up in Coventry. He won't go as far as like Loughborough. So anything above that, he's like, too far, Meg. Can't go there. I'll have to get a plane. And then it's too much for him. But yeah, he's actually my number one supporter. So he loves it. He absolutely loves it.
Your dad sounds brilliant. Do you take after him?
Yeah, I take after him. I'm literally the same. So we used to clash heads when we were younger, because he's quite fiery, I'm quite fiery. And quite opinionated as well, so that never used to help. But yeah, we used to always crash heads. But now we're like two peas in a pod. We're super, super close. So yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Speaking of two peas in a pod, you and Ellie Boutman seem to be just... We had Ruby Tui on recently talking about telepathy with some of her teammates. Are you guys at that level now where you don't even need to communicate in words? You just put the ball there and she's there and you're not like even thinking about it?
Yeah, well, this is going to sound a bit weird, but I always challenge Ellie to get on my shoulder, to almost empt me breaking the line or doing something and her being on the end of it, because her speed is phenomenal and she's starting to grow into her own now. So, yeah, it's madness. Her understanding, like, what she can pick up in terms of, like, she doesn't have to do the fancy stuff all the time. She can let the players inside of them, you know, do the work, and then she can finish it off like she did on the weekend. And she had minuscules of space as well. When she scored that try, I was like, oh, Ellie, you are very, very lucky. Because I was shouting, step in, step in. But she backed herself. So, because I didn't want her to get pushed into touch. Winger's nightmare and a tens nightmare when your winger does that. So, I keep challenging her in terms of, like, let me play and let's see if we can, like, link up. And she chases. She watch her on that clip. She goes from one end to the other. And she finishes it off. So, it's really good. But we're definitely growing that partnership. I can see her flourishing a bit more.
How fast is she, Meg? Like, in the context of fast people in world rugby? Like, because she looks absolutely rapid, doesn't she? Like you say, when she scored that try, tiptoed down the wing, most people, you're thinking, yeah, good one, you've got tackled into touch. But somehow she squeezed her way through.
It's almost like she just tenses up and then she goes. I don't know her actual figures. She's over nine meters a second easily, but it's the repeatability she's got as well, which is amazing, because like she'll do that and then she'd be able to do it again as well. Yeah, I don't know her actual numbers. I think that's one for her to leave in the comments or something, or give her a text. I don't know if she's Jazz Joyce.
Yeah, okay. That was my question. Like, was she fastest in 17?
Well, Grace Crompton, that girl is rapido. So having those two, because Ellie plays fast prop, so having those two on the edges, that's and Grace is coming into her own as well, but she's rapid. I think she ran a 9.4, something like that, which is something I will never, ever, ever achieve.
Nor me, mate.
With a great win on the weekend, yeah, you're switching back to sevens now. Hello, Elmer's cat.
Yeah.
Oh, which one's Shirley. That?
This is Shirley. She's obviously really nosy, sorry.
They love the laptop, don't they?
So, great win at the weekend. Obviously, now there's a break. Is that frustrating? With coming off the back of a win like that, you're back into seven. I think you're heading off to sevens, and then there's the Allianz Cup before you then get back to the business end of the Allianz Premier 15s. Is that frustrating coming off the back of that win, that you can't just dig in and continue on that momentum that you'll have got off the weekend? Is that why everyone wasn't celebrating as much? Because, you know, you've got a break where you've got before you go back into it.
I think, yeah, I think definitely that, like, the job's not done, because the aim is top four. Like, it obviously is amazing beating Quinns. I think that's kind of what I felt as well. Like, I was like, all right, nice, okay, but we've got to win the next two games as well. So it's all good celebrating like we've won the cup, but we've got to win the games coming up. So yeah, it is a little bit frustrating, because what happens is, obviously, we've got Irish, we've got Welsh, we've got the English. So when we all disperse, you go into the different bubbles and then you come back, and then everyone gets a bit frustrated because they're having to, like, not relearn, but almost get to grips with it again, and how each other work. So particularly with me, I go from a really unstructured sevens. I've always got to remind myself, don't step back in, don't step back in. So yeah, that's the biggest thing. And I think, yeah, a little bit frustrated. I would love to just keep doing each weekend now and kind of finish it, but we'll see how we do off the back of the Six Nations and with the Welsh and the Irish being away.
Do you find it tough switching between 15s and 7s so regularly? Because obviously, like, I did it, but we did it in chunks. So you play 7s for a season or half a season and then you chunk back into 15s, whereas you're literally doing it seemingly like week in, week out. And it is completely different games. Like you say, the way you play both games as well, your position in 15s, that must be, I'm imagining, a really tough transition almost weekly.
It's physically not tough. So I always find them actually obviously fitter because I'm running around a lot more. and I'm in the backfield in 15, so I'm actually hiding away from the contact, which is always quite nice. So I was like, make your tackles, make your tackles. But in terms of like what you're saying, with what I was saying with the unstructured and structure, for me is about like the moves. So there was one with our Bristol week, I was literally writing the moves on my hand because I was like, oh God, there's so many parts to it, and just understanding where I need to put the forwards. But after I've had like a game in hand, that really helps me because I go, oh, okay, that makes more sense, because I start flattening up more because I'm either going too deep, because that's what I do in sevens. But I've tried to challenge our inside centres and centres to transition with me, so I'm not always the first receiver, because I prefer being like second receiver sometimes, because that's how it works. But it's understanding how each other play. But the transition more so is like physically fine, just mentally trying to be like, okay, now I've got to hit the forwards three times to then make space on the right, and then I've got to kick if we lose momentum. And whereas sevens, you can kind of ride the wave a little bit more.
Is that why you keep going back to sevens?
The unstructured part of it, yeah, definitely. I think bit of license to kill, and I guess it's like a 1v1 across the whole pitch, isn't it? So yeah, I've definitely got this sevens bug. Big dream for me is like winning an Olympic medal. I need to win an Olympic medal, so it's kind of in my bones a little bit. That's the big aim for me. And then after Paris, I think I'll either sit down just with 15s then and focus on that for a bit. But we'll see, never say never. And plans always change, I say.
It is a massive sevens year this year as well. I mean, you're talking about 23 and that Olympic medal, but there's also quite a bit on offer this year. How does that kind of compare, rank, stack up?
I think the Olympics is obviously the big one. And then I think Commonwealth. And then I think the Rugby World Cup. I don't know, that's how it pans in my head, to be honest. But yeah, the Commonwealth, that's going to be an amazing achievement as well. And to do better than we did last time, obviously Scazzy was there as well in Gold Coast. That was actually very memorable, wasn't it, Scazzy?
It was.
We had a bit of a shambles afterwards, but it was funny. we can go into that. And it's a big step for us. And I think the team we've got, you know, is very exciting. Home Commonwealth Games, what we can put on display in terms of sevens. It's phenomenal. So yeah, Commonwealth Games is definitely a big one. But I've just got that big carrot of Olympics in my head as well. So
does the Commonwealth Games, so obviously what you're alluding to, both of us got ourselves a little bit injured during the Commonwealth Games, so I'm sure we'll come on to the funny story of what happened after that. But does obviously the fact that you did get injured partway through that tournament, does that give you a greater drive for this one? Because sometimes when you do get injured partway through a tournament, it's obviously incredibly tough because you've just ruptured your ACL, but also you've not felt like you've been able to finish the tournament off sometimes.
Weirdly, like I actually really, it's going to sound really weird, but I was grateful the time I did my ACL. Like I think that was quite an important part. My ACL is quite an important part of my journey. So I was like, when I look back, I actually go, yeah, I obviously got injured, but I was still quite a big part of that team. And like, in terms of what the build up to it and everything we achieved. And yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't know, a part of me thinks I was actually, I'm not happy, but like it was kind of bittersweet with winning the medal as well, because I was like, right, I've done my ACL, but actually I've got this lovely medal to show people as well. So yeah, it was a bit of a tricky one. But now going, you know, 5 years later, going into a new Commonwealth Games block, I'm going to be a pivotal part of that team. So to finish off, you know, greater than what we did back then in 2018, that'll be an amazing achievement as well. So, and to bring the girls along with me and obviously the other girls, that'll be the best part. I always find the journey is the best bit, instead of the actual tournament sometimes.
with the Olympics, sort of, obviously it's a massive part in everything that you're saying. Is that from your Rio experience and have being that traveling reserve, was that sort of, how was it being there but not playing? Was that tough and that sort of really stuck in your soul that you wanted to change that? Or
I think that year was really a bit strange for me. So I was coming back off some injuries, and I was very young as well, so I was only 19, and I was surrounded by probably the best England sevens team there was. So you know, you had big names in there like Scaz, obviously Mo, Katie Taylor McLean, like these were like legends of the game, Alice Richardson and Joe as well. So these were huge names that I felt like I was just absorbing the whole time, like everything they were saying, I was just latching to every word. And being a reserve at those games just gave me the drive, not to be like, oh, you know, I should have been in that team, but it was more the case of, right, I need to win this medal now, because obviously, sadly, came fourth, but we did the same in Tokyo as well. So now it's kind of a bit like third time lucky, bit of a joke, let's get a medal now. So that's the drive for me. And to be the first female rugby sevens team to get a medal, I think that's the biggest one for me, because no one's really got one. Obviously, the boys did well in Rio, but no one's really got a medal on the women's side. And that would be really cool to add to the collection, as, you know, on top of all the other bits as well.
Best stories at the Commonwealth Games or at the Olympic Games? I feel we need to get on stories, because there's clearly some.
Well, the one with me and Skazzy, that was just comical. So obviously Skazzy bashed her head, so she was a bit like loop-de-loop. I did my ACL, so I was in a wheelchair. And the girls, straight from the commies, they flew off and they were like, right, girls, sorry, you need to stay at the village and wait for your flight home. And we were like, okay, when's our flight home? And they were like, oh, it could be two, three, four days, something like that. I think it was 3 days in the end, isn't it? So everyone had left, dispersed, like the whole village was empty. It was just me and Skazzy. She was pushing me and we would just literally go around the whole village. Like we got a taxi to McDonald's. It was just comical, the whole thing. And like, obviously Skazzy was trying to recover from a concussion, but I was just like sat there pointing which way to go. So that was always funny.
It was blind leading the blind, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so bad. But yeah, we got a picture of that, haven't we? Because it was like a bit of a games room, wasn't it? And we were just, I think we were playing snooker or something, or air hockey or something like that. But that's quite a memorable moment, wasn't it?
I couldn't remember it, but I'm sure you can.
It's mostly your memories, Meg, but we're happy that you have them.
Other than that, I don't really have any more stories. I think Heather Fisher always brought some good stories, but I'm not sure is they're PC enough. So
there's a lot of them. You had to be there, but I'll never forget though. Do you remember Scotty doubling over that rope? That was one of the funniest things. So basically, there was this bar far away from the village where Meg and Kay and a couple of our other support staff were staying, because they weren't in the village. And we went there a couple of nights, just had a few drinks with the boys and whatnot. And there was almost this like meandering fake river on the way out back to the road. And it had like ropes around it, you know, like what you see on kind of holidays on resorts and stuff. And this one night we were leaving and Emily Scott somehow got herself, it was like a cartoon scene, somehow got herself caught up in it and literally spun around the rope. This is what I remember anyway. Spun around the rope and just splashed into this river. And it was honestly the funniest thing. Obviously, she'd had a few to drink and stuff, but yeah, that was quite funny. But the rest probably for another time.
So, Meg, you just used the words grateful and ACL in the same sentence, and I thought I'd misheard that. You have to literally be the first person I've ever heard to say those two words together. But you did have quite a torrid time of it with injuries, at least initially in your career. And you've spoken about that kind of being, is it defence related? What was going on there?
You know, injuries are part and parcel of the game, and I got them quite early on in my career. One being when I was 17, 18, I dislocated my shoulder, came back, played against the Black Ferns and did it again. That was my first cap. So it was like humbling, I think, was the word I'd give it. Because I thought I was, you know, invincible, this player. I'm quite a physical player, like physical 10. So I love the breakdown, love tackling. That's kind of like part of my game. So it was just like I wasn't ready for big girl rugby yet, basically. I remember my shoulder injury the most, and then the second one was my ACL as well. So during my shoulder injury, just understood the grips of the game a bit better, like in terms of the off-field stuff. So like how to look after yourself, the professionalism that comes with it, you know, the importance of prepping yourself ready for a game. And it's not just a matter of rocking up and playing. Quite diligent with that now, but also like the gym side of stuff and how important that is for your game as well. So to make you robust, and the player I am, I need to be robust to do that. So I think, obviously, looking back, I was just grateful because of what I learned along the way in terms of looking after my body, just the important bits of like balance work and stuff like that, like, which was a big fact, is now a big factor of my game. So I see it in every aspect, you know, when you're kicking, when you're running, when you're sidestepping, all those pieces helped me be a better player now, because I'm able to understand my body a bit better because of those injuries. And I think that's what I'm grateful for, as well as the lessons along the way, you know, like trying to stay true to your values and who you are as a person, but also trying to resonate that on the pitch as well. So, because it's really easy, like, to be like, oh, I've done my ACL. But actually, you notice now, one, it's a really common injury, but two, my partner Celia, she's just done her ACL. So, and I was literally like, right, this will change your life, but you've got to almost take control of the situation as much as you can. And that's any injury. But because it's quite black and white in terms of if it's just straight ACL, you can kind of grip hold of it. So yeah, she's done the exact same. And I could tell she's really enjoying the journey bit of it. Yeah, there's fumbles and tears along the way, but actually, you know, she's starting to journal stuff, which what I was doing as well. And, you know, she's taking grasp of the gym and all, everything, all the little bits that she can refine to help her game. And I think that's the important bit, because it's really easy to go, right, I'm injured, okay, I'll just get back fit. But when you get back, you're not stronger than you were before, or you haven't learned anything along the way. So that's the important part of the journey for me when you get injured, is what you learn about yourself and also about you as a player and how you're going to make yourself better. So
are you sort of like, you've got to do this, you must do that? Does it lead to a few sort of, not headbutts, but you know what I mean, butting yeah, heads?
That's just about to say as well. When I spoke to C at the beginning, she was like, Meg's been great, but she's just gone straight into like physio mode. You need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. This is what I had to do, this is what I had to do. Because obviously Meg's been through it, which made me laugh a little bit, because obviously you guys are quite different people, aren't you, in terms of how you would look at certain stuff. I think Meg's just told a brilliant story in terms of her own injury and how she looks at it. And I think it's such a powerful thing for young athletes, because Meg did get injured so early. She did go through that tough stuff, and actually learning so quickly about the other bits, because some of us old lot aren't as diligent as people like Meg in terms of her rehab and her all those other bits. But actually it's so, so important, and we probably had to learn lessons a little bit harder and later in life, whereas actually I think young players can learn a huge amount from Meg's story. But yeah, sorry. Celia, how's she getting on?
That's very kind, Scazzy. So when she first done it, it was kind of like a grey area. No one knew what she'd done, because she's like this super freak athlete. So everyone was like testing it, like, no, you haven't done your ACL. Saw like four different doctors, no, you haven't done it, until she saw the surgeon. Anyway, so there was a 2-week period where she didn't know what was happening. So she was still strengthening it, and she was like hobbling around. And I was like, see, right, you've got to stop. If you're gonna walk, can you walk properly? And she was like, I know, it's just really sore, Meg. And I was like, yeah, but you're just gonna make it worse if you're not gonna walk properly. Anyway, so 2 weeks gone, and then she sees the surgeon, and she's like, yeah, I've done my ACL. And I was like, oh my God. I was telling her to try and walk properly. Like, I'm like forcing it down her, and she's like hobbling around, like no sympathy at all. So then, yeah, she's done her ACL, and I was literally like, right, okay, you can cry now, but I was like, you need to start. Everything you've done before you go into the operation, you've got to get the strength work in. You've got to get a swelling down, even though she's got minuscule swelling. So I'm just like hammering her. And she was just like, to be fair, she was taking it, because it's her first big injury as well. So she was taking it all in. But there was a couple of days where I was like, right, don't say anything now. Just let her do what she's got to do. But yeah, I think that was just me going into a bit of physio mode. And the physios, I think, get sick of me, because I'm like, well, in my journey, I actually love that. And they're like,
oh, yeah. How does that manifest in a day-to-day life, where obviously you're both in the sevens, you both play together? Is it like if someone, one of you beats each other on the fitness test, it's one of you's peacocking around the apartment? Or have you found a good balance where it's just more of a support network rather than getting too competitive with each other?
When you meet Celia, or if you meet Celia, she is the most calmest, nicest person. So it's like, she just lets me do me, which is the peacocking. She lets me flaunt around the place. She laughs a little bit at me, and yeah, she's just the calmest person. And I think we've got this quite honest relationship in terms of like, if I've, you know, annoyed her or anything, and vice versa, we'll just be like, yeah, can you not do that? Or, you know, and there's no egos, obviously, we're in a relationship. So it's like, whatever said is for the better of them. And, you know, it's just how it works as a relationship, isn't it? So yeah, she lets me do my thing and I let her do her thing, which is watching me do my thing.
in an interview last year with the two of you, I think it was on the BBC, she still said when you're at work, when you're in the team setup, like you don't room together, you really try and seem to really try and maintain boundaries, but there's none of that happening on Instagram. So Instagram is the private life. And then how does the boundaries work? If you guys like clearly define this, it sounds like quite a lot of thought went into it.
Well, yeah, not too much, to be fair. It was kind of like we roomed together the other day, actually, because of COVID, and it was totally fine. I think it was just more like we didn't want people feeling uncomfortable at the beginning. We just wanted to be like, right, you can have a relationship in the team, but it's just about maintaining, you know, that professional status. Like, we don't need to be like holding hands around the place or like, do you know what I mean? Just, there's just no need for it because... I don't know. I don't think you'd do it in another setting or environment. So there was no like clear cut rules. It was kind of just, we didn't say anything. It was just kind of when we're in rugby, we're in rugby. And then when we're outside with our friends, you know, it's a bit more chilled. Or if we're out, yeah, it depends on the setting really and where we feel that we need to give each other love. But in rugby, it's just a different type of love sometimes. But it works really well, you know, like, if we need to, we'll go for coffees if we're in a long period of camp. And the girls always say, go and have some you time, girls, go and have some you time. So they let us go off, just me and Celia sometimes, just to go for like a dinner or something, say we're away for 2 weeks, which is really sweet. So, yeah, it's all about balance, isn't it, life? So we you know, almost not favouriting each other as well. Everyone's a mutual ground. And obviously being co-captain, don't want to look like I've got biased, even though I probably challenge Celia the most and vice versa.
How's it been? Like, obviously she's been injured for most of the season, isn't she? How's it been obviously going away without her? Because you guys have been obviously spend so much time together and stuff. And maybe perhaps more so, how's it been for C? Because she's been the one not going away and not in that environment, isn't she?
Yeah, I think obviously tough, always being the one left home. And like, she's got a good routine now. She's got that set up. And she said to me, I think it was last night actually, she was like, yeah, I just want to play now. And she's looking back at old games and stuff, and I can tell she wants to get back on that pitch. So she consciously is maybe not trying to be a bit of to drag it down, particularly when I'm away. But for me, it was about, again, balance, but like finding the time when to speak to her on FaceTime and sharing the stories that we have on tour, because that's the main bit. It's like when we were laughing at breakfast because Liz spilt her orange juice and like, just, you know what I mean, stupid stuff which is funny at the time, but when you say it out loud again, it's not funny. But she wants to hear those stories, so it's like I was trying to give her as much detail and like almost overcompensate, but yeah, give those stories to her as much as possible. So yeah, definitely tough at times, but it's just for the person, I think, away, it's about giving that extra time, you know, that block just to have an extra FaceTime or give a bit of, you know, how's your day been? Just normal chit-chat. So sometimes tough, but also she understands the rugby world as well. So when I'm busy and stuff, which works in its hand.
March is Pride Month. So outside of it being International Women's Day this past week and also loads of kind of talk and prominence for women, you guys are kind of really visible. You are a very high profile couple in women's rugby, but in women's sport here. How important is that visibility for you now?
We did a Telegraph article in COVID and lockdown. They were like, oh, can we ask about, you know, your relationship? And we were like, oh yeah, of course you can. Like, it's not hidden, but it was kind of like, didn't realize why people wanted to ask about it, you know, because it's so normal for me, for us. Once we did that, we had so much love. Everyone was kind of like, thank you so much for opening up and being this visible couple. And it kind of helped a lot of people, weirdly. So, which I say weirdly because for me it's normal. I was kind of like, but then I look back and when I was coming out as a gay girl, and I'm like, actually, I didn't have people to look up to or like to see that being gay was okay until I came into the rugby world, which was like in my Heartbreed days when it was like, oh, it was more normal to experiment, etc. So that visibility is massive, and just for people to understand how normal it actually is. It's not a hidden agenda. It's not anything we should be ashamed of. And the more, you know, people started asking about it, the more people started opening up to us and was saying, you know, messaging us on Instagram. Sometimes we get emails as well, just saying how important our story is. And it's honestly, our story is no different to probably half the girls across the Premiership, across the team. So, but it was just about being visible, like you're saying. And when you see it more often, it kind of just sets it as a norm. And we're very grateful to have the opportunity to be in the spotlight and be that visible thing for people to see as well. So, yeah, definitely important part of our journey as a couple.
Yeah, I think maybe my perspective on this is a little different because I grew up on a continent where in some places it's still criminalized. So I feel like the kind of celebration of Pride Month is a very important thing to do very overtly because of freedoms not kind of being afforded equally everywhere. And that's why I love you guys for kind of really just, you know, being visible. Are you still coaching? You're still coaching in between all of this other stuff that you're doing, right?
Yeah, so I do a little bit of like one-to-one stuff, and I'm also at Barnes as well, so I do the women's there. So yeah, still coaching and frequent as often, really. Top up the pay packet as well. So yeah, just getting that done as much as I can. But also, you know, life after rugby as well, that's important. And it's good connections, you know, the rugby world is just mental. Like the community that clubs have, you know, Barnes is obviously one I can allude to, but I can't explain like how much they've just brought me into their community, even sounding like this with a Welsh accent as well. So, you know, they want to do so much for the women's game. But yeah, coaching small bits along the way, but yeah, nothing too wild.
Yeah, I was just watching your hip flexion video that you did at Twickenham. I was playing for Bannockburn on the weekend at 43. My hips were struggling yesterday morning.
You need that. Yeah.
I've got to play against the Irish legends this week, which I'm not looking forward to either.
Yeah, they're on you.
I'll probably be dropping in to see what other flexibility stuff you're doing.
I'll let you know. I'll drop one down for you, Mike. Perfect.
Yeah, but you have to do them for my hips, which have no movement whatsoever. So you have to bear that in mind. It's like geriatric hips.
Mike, you're supposed to be encouraging people to get back down to their local rugby clubs, not
I am. I'm still
going
to play this weekend.
Come on.
It's been a while since I played, so you've...
I
did everything that I said that I wouldn't do. Is
pop the pills.
No, just ease yourself back in if you've been away for 2 years. No, I sort of didn't do that. We were playing against the Scotland Army that had quite a lot of Pacific Island boys in who I think were trying to be mean to me and hunt me down, and a couple of them got me a couple of times. So yeah, I didn't do what I said and eased myself in. I just sort of went straight in.
That the thing is, once you're on the wrong side of 35, you just need to warm up.
It's funny that you know that, but it's the more you know it, the less I do it.
So Meg Jones, for fans who want to see you warmed up and competing, at the moment you are gearing up, that's for Langford, right?
Yeah, so Langford's end of April, yeah. Back in camp next week for 2 weeks. We kind of do like a 2 week on, 2 week off process. So yeah, back in camp for 2 weeks and just ramping up the high speed meters now. He sent through the home training week for this week and I kind of looked at it and I was like, oh no, because there's nothing worse than running on your own. So bad. Like, there's a couple of us in Twickenham, to be fair, but just mundane, not mundane, but it's kind of just running back and forth, you know, and trying to get a lot of high speed. When I say high speed, it's like running at like 70, 80% of what your max speed is. So a bit slower for me than what Ellie and Grace are probably doing. But there's the big focus for us is just getting up to scratch, because obviously we want to peak for Commonwealth, but obviously we want to perform well in these other tournaments. So I think that's the challenge, particularly for the S&C we've got, is how we, and coaches, but how we peak for that Commonwealth Games, because obviously that's the pinnacle so far in this year, because we're yet to qualify for the World Cup yet for the sevens.
That's madness, isn't it?
Come on, Cape Town. Yeah, that's crazy. That's unbelievable to think.
Yeah, so we come back from commies and I think we've got to go to like a qualifiers in Europe somewhere, but yet to be confirmed is all a bit go, 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 to be honest.
Confidence must be reasonably high though, coming off a bronze in Seville. Is that right? Bronze in Seville? Because that was like impressive, wasn't it? In terms of, you think about the journey you guys have been on as a squad, you've got loads of youngsters, you've hardly had any time together, X, Y, Z, and then all of a sudden you pull a bronze medal out. Like,
yes, it was it was obviously, we didn't have Fiji and New Zealand there, which probably would have contested. But
Meg, you don't need to mention the small print like that.
Don't discount your achievements.
Most people won't know that.
Come on. But,
to be fair, like, in all honesty, even if they were there, like, you know, we were playing extremely well. Obviously, it's hard to say, but, and as well, Ireland were playing phenomenal as well. So it's like, you really don't, everyone's kind of put their hat into the ring. But as that group, you know, is an amazing achievement because we've now understood those games. Because if you don't play the semi-finals and et cetera, it's really hard to almost get your mindset ready for that, because you'll play in the quarterfinals, semi-finals, and those are like day three, which you're feeling really, really rough. Like, it's the extreme hangover. But the young players have now experienced that and they know what it feels like. And that'll just give us huge confidence, yeah, going into the next tournament. And for it just to be one standalone tournament, hopefully we'll be firing on all cylinders as well. So, yeah, definitely excited about that and where we can go, because we've started building a lot. Yes, obviously the performance side, but around the culture and how we can actually better each other on and off the pitch, challenge each other and feel comfortable. We talk a lot about like positive confrontation and how confrontation helps grow in the group. That they're big talking points for us at the moment. And with a young group as well, is, you know, showing them what the right things are to do in terms of warming up for an hour, almost, you know, getting prepped and ready for those tournaments, but also before games as well, that switch on, switch off that you've probably heard multiple times, Skaz, but yeah, how you're getting yourself back up for a game and then resting and then getting back up, yeah, it can be quite challenging at times, but that's the journey we're on. And I think next tournament will only be better, especially with this big stint of pre-season per se, going into the next tournament as well.
One important aspect of tournament prep these days should certainly be TikTok, because you have an opportunity here to establish yourself as the next big breakout star. Have you got any tips for Emily, who is still very reticent about dipping the toe in there? Shy.
My tips are, if you're good, do the good stuff. If you're stiff, be stiff. So like, if you're rubbish, embrace being rubbish. But if you're like rubbish and trying to embrace to be good, that's when you get like a bit of like, ooh. But if you're rubbish and you're just, you know, just stick with it. Like, and then, so for you, Skazzy, I'd probably
careful.
Say more stiff then. And, you know, just playing around with that. Skazzy, just show us your kicking setup or something. Girls would love that. I'd be watching it 50,000 times.
The thought of TikTok is very much about doing these routine dances to a bit of music that, in my opinion, are a little bit pointless. But I get it. It's entertainment. But actually, it's not. There are some really good stuff that people are putting out there in terms of, like you say, I don't know, their training routine or their day or their bits and bobs that are actually a bit more educational. Some people find really interesting, like fly on the wall type vibe. So I completely get that. I do completely get that. I'm just on the fence with it.
You've had 7 days of COVID isolation. You've literally had so much time to just, I've told you before, let's do the cooking TikTok. Just show us your recipes.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Yeah, you say you've COVID, the house is spotless. I haven't quite got around to TikTok yet. We'll see. Jess Breach is determined to get me involved in something during the Six Nations, so we'll see. Like Meg said earlier, never say never.
God, wait. All I'm posting on TikTok at the moment is videos of Emily talking about the fact that she's shy and scared of TikTok. That's basically my entire TikTok at the moment. I'm dragging you on TikTok and you're not even there to see it, Emily.
I appreciate it.
Oh, well. Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Meg Jones. We're so excited to see you absolutely dominating out in Langford. And also when you return to the Allianz Prem 15s, things are teed up quite nicely now for a very big end to the season.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll see how we get on at the end of the second half. Well, the last two games now coming into the end, but that'll be amazing.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will do our best to keep tabs on Emily when she's in camp with the England team, and also to see what she gets up to on a TikTok. Mike, good luck with the hips and the smashing this weekend.
I'll put that on TikTok because I don't really get TikTok either. My stretching routine.
Basically, just the look behind the scenes.
I'm not sure how many viewers you'll get on an hour warm up. I think you might lose interest after about 45 seconds.
Well, if the rig is creaking badly and there's a lot of complaints, it might, you know, there might be an audience for that. You never know.
It's very true. Very true.
Okay, we have been the good, the Scaz, and the rugby. Yes, the show named after the woman who now also has a statue. Go take a photo with Emily's statue, please, and tag us in it at Good Scaz Rugby. We'd love to see you hanging out with her on the banks of the Thames if you manage to get around there. We'll be back with more next time.